This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Westwood One, NCAA Radio Network. The Illini winning last night. Three of the four lower-seeded teams won. Shout out to Jay Will. Awesome stuff with
him. That was so fun.
The last 20, 30 minutes, whatever it was. So many little moments there, including him saying he has more than three watches that he doesn't actually wear.
Of course he does.
I know. I'm just throwing that out there. And what happened to you? Because you got injured?
Man, the desk. This is the second time the desk has gotten the best of me. This desk is 2-0 against me. I don't know, man. It's a workplace hazard. I don't know. The edges of this desk are sharp, and there's a part of it that's broken off. So maybe that's like big reason why I keep getting these cuts on my hand.
I think this is my fault because I'm so injury prone. I think it's
osmosis. The desk is having a malfunction right here, which led to me actually cutting myself when I got up.
Yeah, I saw that.
I feel like it's I should get workers' comp from ESPN for this. Like I'm playing hurt right now. Questionable.
I'm glad you're grinding it out.
Show your injury on ESPNU so everybody can see it.
It's not a big injury.
Look at that.
There's blood coming through.
Play through that. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not great.
You can see the blood?
Yeah, it's not great.
We also have information that ESPN Radio in St. Louis, 101 in St. Louis, is furious with Pat Costello for his Rams take.
Well, because he just doesn't have any facts.
But do you think that we should make sure that Pat goes on with them just to get destroyed?
I mean,
Can we book Pat as a guest on with this show?
I'm kind of nervous for that because Randy Carricker, my dear friend, mentor, former co-host, no one knows more about this Rams relocation and ultimate move than Randy Carricker does. He has every fact you could ever want, and he will eviscerate Pat.
Like, that's fine that you guys got hurt, but it wasn't your team to begin with.
Well, I mean, Pat, you have a you versus Nuno debate, right? Nuno took down Cleveland, didn't go on in Cleveland.
Did they invite him?
Coward.
I believe they did, right? Nuno?
No, they completely ignored your text or your email when you're like, I can't do it, but Nuno is available, and they never responded.
Okay,
fine.
Maybe we can book Pat to defend himself.
If he can.
Against St. Louis. That'll be fascinating.
I don't think that there's...
Yeah, but that'll be better for us.
Okay.
He just gets eviscerated. Okay. Yeah.
I will ask. I will extend the invitation to 101 ESPN in St. Louis and see if they would like to have Pat Costello on the show.
Never going to stay in St. Louis. They just weren't.
They were going to have Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado in studio, but they said no. They're going to have Pat.
Pat Costello.
Well, they're in LA. They're in LA, so they might have an opening.
All right, whatever. It was a joke.
I know.
You were very specific on that, Smalls. So last night, three of the four lower seeded teams won. Which game stood out to you the most? We know Small's obviously yours, but let's say non-Illinois for a second. Which game stood out to you the most? Then we'll get back to the Illinois part of it.
Oh, man. Which game stood out to probably UNC going down? You know, you expect them to – a lot of people pick them to be the national champion Final Four, so I would say them going down obviously is probably the bigger headline than my Illinois team beating Iowa State to advance to the Elite Eight.
CC?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with Clemson upsetting Arizona. I mean, I love where Coach Brad Brownell did with his team. I mean, they had a nice inside-out game, two-man game with the bigs, Ian Sheflin and P.J. Hall, and then Chase Hunter making plays down the stretch when you needed to from the backcourt. Like, I thought it was just a phenomenal job, even when Arizona cut the lead down to one or cut it to a one-possession game. They just found ways to make plays and continue to stay in control of the game. And that's where senior leadership really steps up. That's when it really matters in moments like that. And having a group that's played together for 2 or 3 years versus a team where you're building it with one-and-done players or transfers, I think that really bared itself out in that upset win. So that's the one that stood out to me the most. And it shows the quality of the ACC in a year where a lot of people thought that they were in an inferior conference comparing them to the SEC and the Big 12.
Can we just, a side note for a second. We've had so much conversation about Kentucky. You just brought up all the veterans on Clemson. Let's say we have a 10-person rotation on a men's college basketball team, Division I right now. The makeup of that team, does it need to be at a point now where we look at it and say, at all given times, you need to have at least 5 upperclassmen and like 2 or 3 transfers? Like, are we at that point where there's actually going to be a formula for this? You know, because Calipari had it as one and done forever.
Yeah.
There were other schools, like Duke forever, never had transfers and never had guys leaving early.
Yeah.
Right? It was, I think it was Elton Brand and William Avery were the two guys that left early for the first time. And Elton Brand was the number one overall pick in the draft. So you're not going to blame him on that, obviously. Yeah. Do you think
Corey Maggette was when that group
Corey Maggette, left early. Is there a formula now? Do you need to guarantee that you have upperclassmen?
I don't know that there's a formula because, I mean, you look at the Duke team from a few years ago that had R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish and Zion Williamson. You mean to tell me that you're not going to take that kind of talent?
You are, but they didn't win.
They didn't win. I guess that's the point. They didn't win, but no coach is going to turn down being able to have that kind of class. And if you see the class that John Shire from Duke has coming in next year, anchored by Cooper Flagg, oh, my God, that is going to be an unbelievable class.
Wait, stop right there for a second.
Unbelievable class.
Should a coach now in modern-day college basketball actually have resistance to turn down that class? Because you know you're only getting them for a year.
No. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
No.
I'd always bet on talent.
Me too.
I'd always bet on talent.
But Calipari has done this for the last decade, and it hasn't worked.
Well, Coach Underwood, when he joined us on Monday, talked about how important those upperclassmen, those veteran guys were to the success of their team. But I think the landscape of college athletics is changing so much that if you have the opportunity to get talent at whatever level, you're going to take it. No coach is going to say, well, instead of taking this younger player who – is rated this much higher than this guy, I'm going to defer to an older player. I just don't think we're going to see that happen.
But coaches have made decisions historically. I won't take transfers. I won't take one and dones. I think right now more coaches would want transfers than one and dones. Like if you said to John Calipari, you could have Cooper Flagg or you could have, I don't know, the best player on Oakland who's available for next year. What are you supposed to do? Like what's the best player on any of the smaller schools that would be still alive here? The best player on Creighton, if you're John Calipari, the best player on Creighton hypothetically, that's not a small school, but you get what I'm saying. The best sophomore on Creighton or Cooper Flagg, what do you do? Because he's been
Cooper Flagg.
But that's Cooper Flagg. I understand what you're saying, but that's kind of where we're at with Calipari and other schools. Again, to your point, you made a specific point, which I agree with. Clemson, veteran-laden, tough, nasty, yeah, big team, and they're playing for a shot to go to the Final Four as a sixth seed.
Yeah.
And nobody thought they could do that. And what shows up this time of year? What you said, veteran-laden, tough-minded, battle-tested type team. I just wonder if the makeup of college basketball is going to change over the course of time. Now to your squad, Illinois.
Let's go.
One more win, and you're on the team plane.
Ooh. Oh, my God.
Brad Underwood, the head coach of Illinois, came on our show this week and said that Illinois grad, Michelle Smallman, that if she can get to Champaign, they will take you with them to the Final Four.
I know.
All it's going to take is you guys being able to take care of business.
Against UConn. They've been struggling recently. They only have a margin of victory of 28.7 points and have won 9 straight tournament games by double digits. That should be easy.
San Diego State by 30 last night.
In Boston, where I'm sure they won't have any fans from Connecticut going to Boston this weekend. No.
It's not like anyone's going to travel for that.
No, very far.
UConn is dominant. They're the class of college basketball. They've only trailed for a total of 28 seconds in the first half total this entire tournament. 28 seconds. It's going to be a tall task, but I feel a little bit more confident about their chances after we had our friend Jay Williams join us, and he was like, "Not the best team doesn't always win. It's the team that gets hot at the right time." And Illinois is firing on all cylinders right now. They're playing the best basketball that they've played all year long. Since they've won the Big Ten tournament, they have been rolling. They have the best offense in the country. Terrence Shannon Jr. is playing out of his mind. Marcus Tomas, like, they are really clicking, and I love the defense that they showed last night against Iowa State. I think they've got a shot, guys. And it's not just because I'm a fan. I really think that Illinois is a team that could take down UConn.
Well, to Jay's point, correct me if I'm wrong, I think since 2004, when they started announcing the number one overall seed, only 3 times has the number one overall seed actually won a championship in the NCAA. So it's usually not the best team. It's not the best team doesn't always win. The best team usually does not win the NCAA tournament. That said, this UConn team feels as close to unbeatable as a team could possibly feel.
Wrong for me to think if Illinois beats UConn that they're going to win it all?
No, it's not wrong for you.
I know
to
they
think
still
that.
Have 2 games, obviously, that they would have to win. But if you can beat that team, you can beat anybody.
Well, see, that would be the problem, though. Like, to think that if you do upset UConn, you think you've won it all, and you realize you still got 2 more games to go before you're cutting down the nets.
You got
to
stay focused.
Like, you got to stay focused. Like, that would be the thing to guard against. Sometimes one of the hardest things to overcome is being able to have some success.
Yeah.
Like, and to be that close to the goal and to be able to slay the giant, slay Goliath, I don't know, man. Smalls, I want to root for your team. I want to get on board with it. I don't know. Right now, the line is 8.5 points. That's the line. I don't know.
Oh, I'm very much rooting for Illinois. I want Michelle Smallman on that plane.
I'm rooting for Illinois. But if somebody is telling me they were going to lay the 8.5 after the margin of victory, the average margin of victory that you just laid out for UConn throughout tournament so far,
that is 28 points a game,
and they're laying 8.5,
yeah,
sounds like a good bet to me.
Now, does she get a +1? Do we know if you get a +1 on the trip?
Probably.
Because do we send Rob with you, our social and digital guy? We have a whole thing. I mean,
we have to have it documented, right?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. We need a full travel diary.
We say for sure, but we don't control the Illinois team.
No,
plane.
I just mean for sure we have to have it documented. So, not that I'll get a +1.
Rob's getting a middle seat on a flight out of LaGuardia. Okay, to Phoenix. But all right, so yeah, we get you with a +1 potentially on that plane.
Imagine the content that I could get for the show being with the team going to the Final Four. That would be unbelievable.
I just worry that your pain is going to be our entertainment. I worry about that.
It's okay. I'm used to it. Did you see what Pat just did to me during the last segment?
But you said you were over it, though. You said you were over the Rams leaving St. Louis. So.
And there's a...
It totally feels like you're over it.
Really over it.
I'm over it. I just...
I'm over Brady and Belichick breaking up. Here's I'm over that.
I'm over it. I just am not going to stand for lies about
What's
my
the
city.
Lie?
We don't need to get into this.
You borrowed them.
Jay is right, though. You do use your hands
I'm
more.
I'm Italian. What do you want from me?
No, but only when talking about the Rams leaving St. Louis. The rest of the time, you have your hands on the stress ball that you have the baseball in your hands.
I should be squeezing the stress.
I know,
ball
but
now.
When it's St. Louis and the Rams, all of a sudden your hands look
Michelle,
out.
Michelle, you literally just said Pat looks like someone who's been cheated on and doesn't know it.
That actually happened. Yeah.
No,
you did say that.
Pat, have you been cheated on? And he said no, and I said you probably have. You just don't know it.
Well, that's a compliment.
That's the same thing.
I think it's a compliment.
How is that a compliment?
Why is that a compliment? Please explain that to me.
Go ahead.
Please explain that one.
Because then she's also saying you look like somebody that could have a significant other. You can only be cheated on if you have a significant other.
Do you want a significant other that's cheating on you?
Do you want a significant other?
I know. If the answer is I could have one that's cheating on me, then the answer is no.
Pat, if I gave you a significant other right now, but you found out a year after that that person was cheating on you, good or bad move for you?
Would I feel good about it?
What are you talking
about? I don't know what kind of logic this is, Evan. What kind of toxic relationship you trying to outline?
I'm saying,
what's the good there?
Pat, to our knowledge, does not currently have a significant other. This
Evan, you got something you want to tell us? A past story? Traumatized?
Why should he be so desperate to pull a significant other where he's taking somebody that's cheating on him?
That feels like such a waste of time. I'm going to spend a year with somebody and find out that they're cheating on me? Pass. I'd rather be alone.
Okay. Just throwing that out there.
I don't think that's anything to throw out there. I think every normal human being would pass on that scenario.
No one wants to be cheated on. But I just kind of assume everyone has been at some point. Maybe you just don't know about it. But it feels like if you've had a dating history at all, it's probably pretty rare.
Is everyone on this show okay?
Maybe you don't know about it because you've been moving and grooving yourself. Maybe you don't know about it because of that.
I definitely don't know about it. I'm not saying that it hasn't happened to me in my life. But I definitely don't know about it if it has.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Actually, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not the song.
Second one.
We can't,
no.
Song.
We can't do that first one.
People
don't even realize there's a first one, which actually makes it worse. Baseball is back. Tune in tomorrow as the Phillies host the Braves, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins 3:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up, an apology of sorts next. It's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Well, the aftermath of Draymond Green getting kicked out yet again of an NBA game two nights ago against the Orlando Magic. Yesterday was the conversation about the Warriors forward and from the Warriors forward slash center, actually, now. Draymond Green on his podcast, The Draymond Green Show on The Volume, discussed his ejection.
I said what I said. I deserved to get kicked out at that point. And what I said, if I'm all the way honest with y'all, I kind of was trying to turn my body and angle and go to the bench. And I said what I said, like a little too soon before angling my body to the bench. But yeah, it just can't happen. And like, we need to win games. So like I said, not going to overreact. Like, oh man, like stuff is never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it seems. Like I know where I am. I understand what I'm doing moving forward. And in my position, just make sure that that's the exception and not the rule.
As a vocal Draymond Green fan, as I am, I would like to ask the question that I don't know the answer to, which is when he says, I know what I'm doing, what is he doing?
Getting kicked out.
Like, what is he doing? Like, okay, so you're getting kicked out of the game. It's never as good as it seems or as bad as it seems. Okay, I get that. But it seems.
No, I don't get that part.
But in this case, it seems pretty bad.
I don't understand that part. It's never as good as it seems, never as bad as it seems. To me, it sounds like somebody that's being completely dismissive of the criticism that's coming toward him for getting ejected out of these games and his on-court behavior when it comes to antics after the whistle. Like it feels like he's trying to diminish what impact that has on his team overall. And that's the part where it sounds like excuse making from Draymond. Mm-hmm. And at some point, enough is enough. And at some point, the Golden State Warriors have to realize the juice is not worth the squeeze. Draymond Green is more of a liability than he is somebody that can help them allow Steph Curry to compete and go on deep playoff runs in the twilight of his career. Draymond Green is no longer that player because he's not reliable. Mm-hmm. It's not that he doesn't have the game, because when he's out there, it's clear his impact on the team's overall success. But the only problem is it's too infrequent. And now we're talking about this guy having another incident on the court where he's being ejected in a game that actually mattered. Let's not forget, two nights ago, they needed that win against the Orlando Magic, a top six team in the Eastern Conference, a team that has an all-star in Paolo Banchero, who Draymond Green was going to be the one in primary coverage against on defense. And you got kicked out. There was no Jonathan Kuminga, so you leave Andrew Wiggins and Steph Curry out to dry in trying to hold on to one of the best front court players in the Eastern Conference. I don't understand why he continues to make excuses or try to diminish the on-court behavior that we've seen and that everybody universally acknowledges is unacceptable.
This is a guy who is showing us time and time again that he does not understand the severity of his actions. It doesn't really matter what punishment or what consequences have come after it. The behavior stays the same in one way or another. And honestly, in listening to that back, the way that he was dismissive of it and diminishing it and kind of laughing about it, how disrespectful is that to your team and specifically to Steph Curry? A guy who you did leave out to dry in an important game. A guy who you saw in that moment really be affected by what you did. And then you're going to go on a media platform and you're going to kind of laugh and brush it off and say, basically, oh, you know, you guys don't really know the situation. It's not that bad. What is that? If I'm Steph Curry, how am I supposed to receive that? Because you weren't there for me. You weren't there for our team. And it was all a completely avoidable situation, but you couldn't rein in your behavior yet again. If I'm Steph Curry, that would really upset me that he would take that approach.
I wonder if Steph is numb to it, though.
He didn't seem numb to it in the moment, Evan.
Yeah. The way he was emoting.
The aftermath, though.
Yeah, well, not in the moment. Like, you saw him right there between Draymond and Ray Acosta in the moment, and he wanted to interject. But he realized that he couldn't help Draymond regulate himself.
He seemed fed up.
Yeah, I agree with.
Yeah, he put his head in his jersey, and then after the game, you heard what he said in the post-game press conference. And he's like, whatever needs to happen so that Draymond is out there on the court with us, that's what needs to happen moving forward. Like it felt like very much so a guy that was over it in listening to Steve Kerr. Sounds like a coach that's over it. I'm just wondering now, have we gotten to the place where the organization as a whole, Mike Dunleavy, Joe Lacob, are they over it?
The trickiest part about Draymond Green is that any organization in any sport looks at every single player and thinks, can we get the same production at a younger age for less cost, right? No matter who, like the Kansas City Chiefs would look at Patrick Mahomes and say, can we get the same production for less cost at a younger age? And the answer is eternally no, right? Mm-hmm. They did it though with Tyreek Hill, right? They said like, okay, we can get production, lower age, lower cost. This is where Draymond is so interesting. You cannot get, there's nobody in the league that will give you the production that he gives you at what he does.
But what does that mean in terms of team success, though? What is that equated to the last couple of years?
Well,
because, I mean, you punched Jordan Poole in the face. The organization gave Jordan Poole a contract. They had to move off of him because he's bad for team chemistry. Okay, that tanks that season. They got bounced by the Lakers last year, I think, in the conference semis. And then this year, you're in danger of not even making the playoffs. So what is all of those things that Draymond Green does on the court for you in the way of basketball, what does that mean in terms of team success?
It means that Steph Curry doesn't have to change his system. That Steph Curry's comfort of playing this
way. Well, they
got to
change something because they're not contending right at the same level that they have in the past.
Understood. But at this point, Steph Curry is so comfortable, rightfully so, in this system. And this is the way they play. And Draymond Green is the one who unlocks Steph Curry more than anybody else. So it will require Steph Curry and Steve Kerr coming to a place this offseason and saying, okay, the way we've played for the last, what, 10 years is not going to happen anymore exactly this way because we don't have that Swiss Army knife to unlock things. We are playing style A. We now have to learn style B based on whatever return we get for Draymond Green, whatever return we may get for Andrew Wiggins, maybe letting Klay Thompson walk to the Lakers or somewhere else that or the Sixers that have cap space, whatever it is, right? That's the risk in all of this is Steph Curry is going to have to learn a new way of doing it because I cannot, off the top of my head, come up with one singular player that plays the way that Draymond Green plays. That doesn't mean he's the best player in the league. That doesn't mean he's better than Giannis. But stylistically, there is not a player that could care less if he takes one singular shot and will impact offense the way he impacts offense.
So you can't replicate it.
You cannot. So you cannot get younger and as efficient and as effective at a lower cost because there is nobody that does what he does.
But the problem with what Draymond has done is that he's almost made himself a pariah when it comes to other teams around the NBA. Nobody's going to give the Golden State Warriors fair value for what Draymond represents to that team when he's available.
To them, exactly right.
Exactly. I mean, who else is going to defend, give you the position versatility on the defensive side of the court? Who else is going to be able to initiate offense as a front court player? Like, you're just not going to be able to have those luxuries. But also, no team is going to give up the kind of assets that it would take to acquire a player that has that potential impact because they don't know if Draymond Green is going to be available.
So the return for the Warriors has to be whatever it is they deem their new version of the Warriors to be, right? Which we may look at it and say...
But it doesn't matter. Like, you're not going to get fair value for Draymond Green if you trade him. The decision to trade Draymond would be addition by subtraction. It's not because of what you're going to bring back. And that is the conundrum that Draymond Green has, you know, put the Golden State Warriors organization, and more importantly, Steph Curry in.
Coming up, arguably the greatest college basketball player of all time doesn't seem to like college basketball. We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
One win away from Michelle Smallman's Illinois team going to the Final Four, which means she gets on a plane, she goes to Champaign, she gets on the team plane, and goes to the Final Four, as promised by Brad Underwood, the head coach. of Illinois.
One game away, but they have UConn.
Yes, they do have UConn. Christian Laettner is one of the greatest college basketball players ever. Christian Laettner had an all-time great college basketball career at Duke. He also was a very solid NBA player for a decade or so. And yesterday he was on with Greeny, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time, a two-time NCAA champion, that is, with Laettner, and talked about the NIL and transfer portal in college basketball.
They got to take out the NIL. They got to wipe that out. They got to change the transfer portal. I know everyone's saying the horse is out of the barn and you can't take stuff back, but how can you establish any type of culture at a school when you're getting new kids every year? That would mean every year was like my freshman year at Duke, and you're so much better your third, your fourth year when you're under one system, one program, one coach, one specifically defined culture that you, the way you want to play offense, the way you want to play defense. I don't know how the coaches do it in today's game, and that's why some of the better ones are starting to quit. It's just horrible. It's horrible. I hope they change it.
Okay, so NIL and transfer portal are one topic. Continuity and culture, I would say, are another topic, because best case scenario, you could have NIL and transfer portal and have continuity and culture. This is a guy that Christian Laettner, who grew up with nothing, made himself into something and made millions, and now is looking back on it and maybe a little bit forgetting about when he had nothing. You okay, CeCe?
No, I'm ill. I want to throw up in my mouth right
okay.
now. It just disgusts me when guys do this. I don't understand why you want to get rid of NIL and transfer portal. For years, decades on end, these schools, these coaches have been exploitative in terms of their practices when it comes to these prep players that are the life's blood of these blue blood programs. And now these athletes are finally getting to a place where they can recognize their true value to these institutions. And I'm happy about it. If you don't like the way that college basketball has evolved, then blame the NCAA. Blame the coaches. Blame the schools. But for goodness sakes, don't take away the measures that the kids have of being able to maximize their athletic ability and turn that into money. I just don't understand that. I don't understand that logic. It's bass ackwards thinking. And I get sick of these players from yesteryear trying to apply yesteryear's logic to a game and to a business that is different from the one that they experienced. I mean, think about how much money the NCAA generates just from March Madness alone. You're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions. I don't get it. I don't understand it. The NCAA could have avoided this issue had they decided to go down the road of forming a true partnership with players years ago, but it took state legislation across this country to make them do something that they should have already been doing. And because state legislations, because Congress had to step in and allow these kids to do this, now there is no control. The NCAA has no control over what's taking place. It's the wild, wild west. I'll acknowledge that this is disorganized. But this is by no stretch or by no means the players' fault. And so I can't get on board with the logic from Christian Laettner, because it sounds like it's going to be punitive toward the players in terms of allowing them to make money off of their athletic ability.
I'm with you 100% on this, CeCe. I see both sides, like Chanel's Frank Ocean once said, because the players should absolutely be getting the money that they have deserved for a long time. They should have that autonomy and their decisions on where they want to go. But because the NCAA pushed this back for so long and didn't want to allow this, it has been a really volatile landscape. And if you talk to coaches, they're talking about how they're having to recruit 24/7, even their own players, and that it is difficult for them to maybe exert a certain level of control or coaching style that they might have in the past, because they are very delicate in the way that they handle some of these players now, because they don't want these young men and women to then want to leave and try to find greener pastures elsewhere. So it has really changed the game in a lot of different ways, both positive and negative.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a college basketball coach or college football coach at this point. I don't think it's that attractive.
That's fine. There are plenty of other people that want the job.
Yeah,
and I
know.
Think that it's attractive.
But
that's fine. If you don't want to coach college sports, fine. Get out of it. There are plenty of people that will take the job. Like these are good jobs. And there's a finite amount of them when it comes to the programs that matter in the landscape of college basketball or college football. So, yeah, is coaching college sports a little bit harder than it was yesterday? Yeah. because of recruiting and how that's changed. But it's adapt or die. If you don't want to be a part of it, you don't have to, because there's somebody that's dreaming of being in those situations where they can coach Kentucky basketball, where they can coach Duke basketball, where they can coach at UNC, where they can coach at UConn. If you don't like the job, then get the hell out of the sport.
Yeah, which is why, as I was, what I was saying was, I wouldn't want to coach it because of who I know I am. I want to help build you up over the course of years, and I don't have that time. So I wouldn't be a fit, which is why I give some of these guys that are actually getting out credit for getting out. It's actually the recognition of knowing who you are. If Jay Wright at Villanova, who is a phenomenal coach, believes that he needs to get a kid as a freshman and build that person up as a student athlete to become an adult going to the NBA, and he feels like he needs 2, 3, 4 years to do it, and that is his style, and he cannot do that, I actually think it's great that he got out, because somebody that is 20, 25 years younger than Jay Wright is probably more accustomed to this being the only way it's done, so they don't even know the other way. So when you see Nick Saban or Jay Wright or some of these coaches getting out of it, I actually think it's great in terms of self-recognition, because and both of those two guys got out on top. It's not like they were not doing well. They were still doing well, but it wasn't for them. It can be for someone else. That's fine. That's totally fine. It clearly is for Danny Hurley at UConn. Danny Hurley has found a way to do all of it.
But why are we criticizing it and saying, well, that's why all of the good coaches are getting out, when there are clearly still good coaches in college basketball? Like, what's the point that Christian Leiter is making?
I think it's an age thing is how I would look at it, right? It's like you're trained to be something for a certain amount of time. Like guys like Wright or Saban or whoever were trained to be. That's the sport that they were in. They're not trained in the current version of the sport. Younger, newer coaches are, and they're going to become great in this version of the sport. Fine. Great. Like, it's a different sport altogether. When you played college football, it's different than today, right? Mm-hmm. You were comfortable playing when you played. You may be comfortable playing today. There may be a lot of things about it that you're like, I don't like this.
Yeah, but
it's
a totally different
era.
But when Christian Leitner says college athletes need to put in more time before being monetarily rewarded, I don't understand if I can get on board with that. Do we have that sound, Nuno, where he says that?
He's not here.
He's missing in action.
Okay, can we tee up the sound, please?
Yeah, we'll find it.
It's right there. I'm looking at it. We don't have it. Okay. So, yeah, I thought we had that sound. The college athletes need to be put in more time here. But I think that in general, what Leitner's saying is an outdated opinion, and it's based on his era of college sports. It's not based on the current
era. His era of college sports was 40 years ago.
Yeah, right. And so it's an outdated opinion.
And he also would have benefited greatly from today's model.
Well, here's the other thing. I'm going to out the dirty little secret.
40 years ago.
I'm going to out the dirty little secret on this.
What are you talking about?
I'm not saying Duke. I'm saying in general. If these athletes that played then are going to sit here and tell us that athletes then did not get paid, are you freaking kidding me? We're going to sit there and say that you didn't get money under the table. You were getting the NIL. You just didn't have the right to transfer at that point, or the opportunity to transfer. Here's Leitner from Greeny yesterday. Hello?
Life is not about immediate gratification. Life is not about immediate results. You have to work hard. You have to dedicate yourself. You have to become very, very good at something. Go to school. Work on your passion, whatever it is, and you'll get the gratification at the end, and that's what the NBA is for. Work hard your whole life. Get better at basketball. Make it to the NBA, and then maybe you can get paid $50 million a year. That's what real life is, not this TikTok life, Snapchat life, social media life where you get immediate gratification and a million views. And oh, my God, I just hate it. I'm sorry. Too old school, I guess.
So the schools and the coaches can make money, but the players shouldn't make money. Is that where we at with this thing now? Is that what he's saying? Oh, well, you got to work on your life's passion when you're in college. That mean I can't get paid for it, though? Because I'm getting paid doesn't mean I don't love what I'm doing. Listen, I love playing football. And I loved making money in the NFL. Just because I love to do something doesn't mean I don't want to be compensated for it. And that's all these kids are saying. Pay me what I'm worth to the school. Pay me what I'm worth to the coach. Like that, this antiquated idea or model that Christian Leitner is floating out there is just asinine to think that college sports, particularly the revenue-producing sports, is going back to that. It ain't going to happen, dog. And it's not the kids' fault what the state of collegiate sports is. It's not on them. This is on the NCAA. This is on the coaches who for decades on end were able to take advantage of the work that these kids put in on the field, on the court. This is their fault. It's not the kid's fault.
No.
Stop trying to punish him.
And while I do understand what he's saying a little bit about the instant gratification, because that feels like that's where the landscape is
right
now.
But it's not instant gratification. These kids have been doing it all their lives.
They have. But also, how can you say that they should have delayed gratification when it comes to the money, when, as you pointed out, everyone else is getting instant gratification and getting paid in this scenario? The school's getting paid. The coaches are getting paid. They don't have to wait to get the money from the situation at the end of all of this. So why would the players be the outlier here? That one I can't justify.
He also played for a coach that was at the school that he played at from 1980 to 2022. So he never experienced what everybody else is experiencing of, like, I'm committing to, when you committed to Virginia, it was not Al Groh, correct?
It was George Welsh. I played a year under George Welsh.
Right. So like, he's not used to that part of it. The other thing is, for better or worse, many players that play at high level college basketball from the years 18 to 22 is their actual highest earning power in their lives. And he's suggesting they don't get paid at their highest ability to earn, because not every player goes to the NBA.
No.
Right? I'm just looking at some of the rosters that he played on. There were some really good players that he played with. They did not play in the NBA.
Yeah, Zach Edey, what, two-time National Player of the Year?
Like, what if he doesn't make it?
About to be? I mean, he's going to get drafted, but he's, I mean, the NBA game is past his passed him by. Like, the style of play that he plays, nobody is rolling with the back-to-the-basket big that it can't stretch the defense. So, like, these are Zach Edey's prime earning years when it comes to endorsements, NIL, things of that nature. Why should he not take advantage of that? That makes no sense. Again, to say you're going to get rid of NIL in the transfer portal is punitive toward the kid. It doesn't allow them to maximize their ability to earn based off their athletic ability. I just, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't.
We're in Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
In a controversy that seemingly could only happen to the New York Jets, this is remarkable. So the NFL Network initially reported at the owners' meetings that there was a dispute between Jets head coach Robert Saleh and the owner of the team, Woody Johnson. And, okay, that report was out there that they got into some sort of argument at a party at the owners' meeting. Again, this could only happen to the Jets. So Woody Johnson, the owner of the team, comes out and denies it. And the reporter in this case, Colleen Wolf, she clarified everything. All right, we all make mistakes, whatever it may be. But in the clarification, somehow only the Jets, Woody Johnson added to the controversy by tweeting this at Woody Johnson 4. All this nonsense about a heated argument between Coach Saleh and me at the league meeting is absolutely false. It is yet another irresponsible report from the NFL Network. Please disregard. Woody Johnson is one of the owners of the NFL Network. The owners of the NFL teams also own the NFL Network. So only the Jets, with a proper denial of something that did not happen, have now added to another controversy where the NFL owners are now discrediting their own network. Only the Jets. Only the Jets.
They find new and creative ways to be so dysfunctional. It feels like every month, right? It's something different with the Jets. I also love how he signed off the tweet, "Please disregard," like it's a company email. You know what I mean? Like a blast to everybody, "Please disregard." But I also think it's so interesting when owners are tweeting about things. Like, to be out there tweeting about stuff like this, I understand that you want to tamper it down a little bit, but by you tweeting about it, you're only throwing more flames on the fire because then we're talking about it.
A hit dog will holler, won't it? And that's what it feels like for Woody Johnson to come off so strong in a denial, and then Colleen Wolf, who's an employee of the NFL Network, having to issue an apology. It just lets you know that there's something there. And that's the issue.
What do you mean by that? Explain that.
Well, there's something there. There's something to it. There's something to it. Like a hit dog will holler. Like, okay, somebody said something that we didn't want out there in the ether, and we're trying to cover up the dysfunction that has been the last couple of years. Scratch that. The dysfunction that has been since Woody Johnson took over ownership of the team from Leon Hess. Like, this has been a roller coaster ride for Jets fans, and with Woody Johnson and Rob Saleh getting into it at the owners' meetings, it feels like more of an ominous sign for what's to come in 2024 in a season where we recognize that they're up against it in terms of trying to get this team to fulfill the potential that we thought they had when they made the trade for Aaron Rodgers.
Well, that's the part of it is like, all right, so an owner of a team and a head coach of a team hypothetically get into an argument in front of other people. What team are you going to assume that happened with? Like, if we're going to draft that, the Jets are a lottery pick. I promise you, right? Because you're not going to assume that the Rooneys and Mike Tomlin got into an argument in front of people. No. Could they get into an argument behind closed doors? Of course. People work with each other, get into arguments every single day. But it's whether or not it's in front of people. It is so believable that yes. The Jets got into an argument in front of everyone, including media, at a party. But within the denial, you rip your own business. And you call your own business not credible, which, by the way, the NFL Network is very credible. They do have great talent there and reporters there. And yet the owner of the network is telling you not to watch the network.
Well, basically what he said is fake news, right? Which would make a lot of sense, right?
Oh, boy. What are you guys doing over there?
I'm just saying, I mean, Woody Johnson under the previous administration was an ambassador to the UK. I'm just putting it out there. But I guess my whole point is this. If you're Woody Johnson, why is this something that you feel the need to address?
Exactly.
Don't you have other things that you have to do in preparation for the draft, in preparation for the start of the team's offseason program, OTAs, minicamp, getting ready for training camp? Don't you have other things you could be doing other than issuing strong denials from something that was rumored from one of the NFL Network employees? That's the part of this that doesn't make sense. This is killing an ant with a sledgehammer. Why are you doing this if it weren't true?
I totally agree, because with today's news cycle, this was something that was talked about a bit and it would have died on the vine. We would have continued to move on and talk about other things. The Dallas Cowboys would have taken them completely out of the conversation.
Smalls, there was no story. There was no story. It wasn't a story.
But like, now there is.
Colleen Wolf said something. She said, yeah, there was a rumor at a party that there was some back and forth between Rob Saleh and Woody Johnson. It got pretty heated. There was no story. We didn't know what they got heated about. We didn't know who it was in front of. We didn't know any of those things. We didn't know any kind of implications that it could have. We knew none of those things. It wasn't a story. We couldn't talk about it. When it happened 2 days ago, we didn't talk about it on our show yesterday.
No.
There was no story.
No details.
Woody Johnson made it a story.
That's
emblematic of what the Jets' problem was. That is it. If you want to boil it down to why the Jets have all of this talent but can never put themselves in position to compete for a title, why they can't get in the playoffs, why they have the longest playoff drought in North American team sports, that's the reason why. I keep saying it with the Dallas Cowboys about how leadership is important, fish rotting from the head down. It's the same thing with the Jets. Matter of fact, it's worse with the Jets. At least the Cowboys can say we win games in the regular seasons. The Jets can't even do that. Oh, my goodness.
It feels like no one there is on the same page about anything.
All right, reckless speculation time.
What's up?
All right, our top five hypothetical teams that we think an argument could occur between an owner and a head coach in front of everyone else.
Ooh. Okay, so you have the Jets.
Yeah, well, we all have the Jets.
May I throw the Carolina Panthers into the ring?
I like that.
David Tepper?
Yeah. I could see David Tepper loves to insert himself into decisions.
All right, so we got the Panthers. Reckless speculation hypothetically here. Based on the information that these teams have given us.
I got an easy one.
I actually can't see the Cowboys, as odd as that sounds. Could you?
Yes.
Mike McCarthy ain't yelling at Jerry Jones.
Right, especially not in front of people.
But I can see Jerry popping off.
Nah, I got one for you. Jimmy Haslam, Kevin Stefanski, Cleveland Browns.
I can see it.
I think he loves Stefanski, but based on, again, all the stuff we've heard, reckless speculation, hypothetical Jets situation. Yeah, you always got to put the Browns.
The Cleveland Browns.
You always got to put the Browns
okay,
in
so
there.
How many is that? Three?
We have the Panthers, Browns, Jets.
Okay, so.
That's a big three right now.
Nuno threw out Brian Daboll yelling at John Mara. I just couldn't see that.
Well, again, we're doing it. Wait, whoa. We're doing it based on information these teams have given us. There's reporting last year about Daboll and Wink Martindale, his then defensive coordinator.
Yeah, yelling at the defensive coordinator is slightly different than yelling at the guy whose name is on your check.
All right.
Totally.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit different.
Is there anyone else that you could see? Uh-oh, Smalls. Go ahead.
No, I'm... One popped out to me, but I think it's all love between them. But Mark Davis, Antonio Pierce, I could just see Antonio Pierce, you know, being like a fiery personality, and Mark Davis. But they
no,
love.
No, but
each
that's
other.
A that's a good
Sean,
one.
Sean Payton yelling.
That
at,
was
going to
be my other
Sean
one.
Sean Payton.
That's a good one.
Because that's a different category.
I'm getting paid $18 million a year. I can yell at you if I want to, dog.
Sean Payton.
Anybody in the Walton Bennett group can get it.
Sean Payton and Antonio Pierce to me, same category.
They would
the
yell.
The fearless category.
They would be.
Yeah.
They're
fearless.
That's why I picked Antonio Pierce. Like, just because
I don't care. You signed a $20 million check to me. If I'm right, you're going to know I'm right.
That's why I picked him. He's not going to back down.
We're Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.